sound very echoey.
I sound echoey?
Yeah, you sound like you're talking to me from inside the shower.
Oh, no.
Oh, now you sound better.
I think I know what happened.
Oh.
I had my Bluetooth headphones connected.
I see.
And I just turned them off, and now everything is good. And now Skeeter is licking the recording equipment.
Great. So it's blessed.
Yes.
It's being blessed by Skeeter.
Yes. Yeah, everything's okay. Everything is great.
Is this your new couch?
Yeah, this is the new couch.
Listeners, it's gold velvet.
It's a gold velvet.
That's the most important
couch.
Thing I want to reveal to you all. It's very stylish.
It's a gold velvet Chesterfield couch.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, obviously a Chesterfield is what that is, but I wouldn't know how to identify it. It just means it has those puffy little button sections.
It's got the inverted nipple situation going.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's really deep and, you know, nice. And
yeah. So nice.
It's really great. I love it. It makes me feel very luxurious, actually.
Yeah. Great.
It took some convincing.
Of whom?
Grunge Girl.
Grunge Girl, I see.
Who's like in the next room and can probably hear everything I'm saying right now.
Right.
She's come around to it and really likes it, especially with the way that we're like using the carpet to like frame it. Anyway. When you don't have kids, you can be insufferable like this.
Right. Plenty of people who have kids are insufferable in their own way.
Yeah, of course. You know, you need to be insufferable somehow.
Somehow. We're all just finding our own ways to be insufferable.
Yes.
My couch is not that fancy looking, although it does have recliners in it, as you'll soon discover when you come sleep on it this weekend.
That's right.
Sleep on it.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Michael is coming for a sleepover to play a contra dance in Providence.
Not Providence.
Wherever. I don't know. Whatever you contra dance people do. I don't acknowledge the reality of that.
Yeah, that's healthy. That's healthy. Yeah, I'm going to visit you. I'm excited. After we hang out, I might go to the Cape. My family is going to be
right,
in the Cape.
Right. You're going to come here and I'm going to get you set up and then you're going to go play a contra dance. And then you're going to come back and sleep and then we're going to have lunch the next day and hang out.
Yeah. Cute.
Except you'll be woken up super early by my fiance getting up and going to work. Just accept that now. Although you're really good at going back to sleep. So.
Oh, yeah. I don't care. How are you, Hava? How are you?
Oh, Bruchshem. It is, you know, we're recording this on Pesach Eve. I am going to a beloved Chevruta's house for Passover Seder this evening. I look forward to this meal all year. This person just cooks like the most incredible.
No one wants to hear this, Hava. No
wonderful
one.
Meal.
No one wants to
wait
hear this.
To eat it.
This is cruel.
And they like do a really good job of making sure you have little snacky bits throughout the Seder so you're not fucking hungry and grumpy throughout the Seder.
Oh, that's so good.
It's the best. I've become so accustomed to this Seder that anything else would pale in comparison.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So wait, you're going tomorrow.
No, tonight.
Tonight. Oh, wow. Tonight.
I'll have a Seder tonight. Yeah. So that's a sort of like the big feature of my day. You know, I tried to get some work done this morning, but it has big like last day before Christmas break energy at school where you're like, nobody is going to get anything done today. It's a holiday.
That's cool with the work that you do. You feel that. I don't feel that at my job at all.
Well, yeah. Well, you probably aren't following a strict Jewish religious calendar at your work either.
No.
I think if you were, you would feel that energy.
Although I feel like I should push for like getting Passover off as like a company holiday, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about a company holiday. You should definitely have it off. Like they have no grounds to refuse it to you, but.
Yeah, that's true. I'll just slack off.
Great. Great that they called that app that. That's what it's for.
I know it's supposed to be kind of funny, but I think it's very strange that an official like app that all the corporations use is called Slack.
I think it was named that for some other reason that would fit in a TED talk that's like inspirational or something. Like we realized what companies were missing was Slack.
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
And that's why we innovated with Slacknology.
Oh my God. Those are the people who would have been
first to the guillotine.
No, I was going to say that those are the people who would have been the people in Zone of Interest.
In what?
In Zone of Interest, the movie.
I've never seen that movie.
You don't know about Zone of Interest, Hava? You got to see it. Jonathan Glazer, the Oscar speech about Gaza.
No.
Hava, you're supposed to be the pop cultural person on the pod.
Yeah, but I only deal with low culture.
All right. Well, I made a really dark joke about a Holocaust movie that just came out. That's very good.
I see. That's the context. It's all coming together for me now.
I know that's not exactly your vibe, dark Holocaust movies, but it's very good. I recommend it.
Yeah. I have a lot of media on my slate right now. I've recently, this is like a very neurodivergent thing to say, but I've recently started listening to music again.
No, I'm totally there with you.
Because
yes.
I usually just have podcasts on, but recently I reactivated Spotify and have been like having music on instead. And it's been a wild ride. I forgot that music like creates all these feelings in me, provokes an emotional response in a way that podcasts don't most of the time.
I have had a similar experience. I've been driving instead of listening to pods, I just go to like whatever the top 40 radio station is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow, this is like music. I forgot that it exists.
Yeah. Great. I'm glad we're on that same bizarre journey.
Yeah.
I am mostly listening to the emo revival music from my high school days, which still hits just as well as it hit then. Oh, yeah. Also, once this comes out, this will still be relevant. Shellmala has a bunch of cool things going on. We have Shellmala membership now. There's a Shellmala Patreon.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then there is Lex Rofberg, friend of the show's Foot Torah class coming up. And also, I am going to be teaching a class starting at the end of May about Jewish law, like views on criminality and snitches and cops and collaborating with the government. It's called Thorns in the Vineyard. Look forward to it. I will put links to these various things in the description. Anyway, now dazzle me. With Talmud.
I'll dazzle you with Torah, actually.
Dazzle me with Torah. Someone recently told me that their favorite episodes are the ones where I sing a lot, so.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm going to become even more unhinged. I'm going to create a podcast environment that is so unhinged and musical.
Oh, no. Well, okay. I'm here to dazzle you with Torah.
Okay.
Remember in our like a shorter episode, I talked about being interested in charisma.
Right, Riz.
Riz, exactly. So I wanted to get to the bottom, or at least closer to the bottom, of what the metaphysical underpinnings of charisma are in Judaism. And there isn't like a go-to source for that, exactly.
Shocking.
You know, unfortunately.
This just in, folks.
Sometimes I wish that the Jews just had some catechisms, you know what I mean?
That just sort of like outlined basic beliefs on a variety of things. I don't know what a catechism does.
It does that and a little bit more. It's like an in-depth outline of everything, you could say, in the Catholic Church. Whereas like the Jewish catechisms are just the thousands upon thousands, millions upon millions of pages that have been written over the, you know, it's like that's it. That's the catechism.
Keep it simple.
No fun. But I did find a modern book that I thought was really cool. They had a great passage where they talk about charisma. So this is a book called Man and God. It was written in the...
You know a book's going to be good when it has a boring-ass title like that.
Oh, totally. Written by Eliezer Berkowitz. I don't know anything about Eliezer Berkowitz.
Me neither.
I believe it's an academic. It was written in the 60s, and I guess published by the Wayne State University Press. So yeah, it's an academic book. It's a deep exploration of the Torah, a close reading, looking at phrases and words and how they're used and what that can tell us about, you know, the relationship between God and man.
Okay, big topic.
And there's this awesome chapter called The Spirit of God that talks about how the word ruach is used.
Which is very interesting because Holy Spirit is like such a thing in Christianity.
Yes.
And it's also a thing in Judaism, but just like it feels a lot less centralized, at least in like day-to-day practice. You know, I don't run into a lot of Jews asking to be indwelt with the Holy Spirit.
Although, like, I feel like if they knew what it was about, they would, you know.
Right.
Maybe I'm just projecting.
They'd be cooler if they did.
I mean, yeah.
Okay, so tell me about Ruach HaKodesh.
So Ruach is used with different names of God, but the way that it's often translated in various versions of Tanakh is the Spirit of God, the Wind of God, things like that.
Yeah.
What Eliezer Berkowitz goes into is he makes this distinction between Ruach Elohim and Ruach Tetragrammaton, which he refers to as Ruach Y or Ruach Yud.
All academic books must create some new piece of terminology that only makes sense in their own framework.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Ruach Y fits that to a T.
Yeah. So what this scholar says is that most of the time when Tanakh uses the phrase Ruach Tetragrammaton, Ruach Y, it's referring to the Ruach coming onto a person and that person getting things like physical strength or leadership skills. For example, leadership in judging what the best course of action to do is for like the Israelites, or leading people into a military victory.
Okay.
Getting people to do stuff. Basically, charisma.
Some of those were charisma. Some of those were different.
Yeah, some of them were, just like being real meaty. So like Samson has this Ruach Tetragrammaton put onto him right before he like pulls, you know, right. down. But he also gets that Ruach Tetragrammaton on him when he's being kind of like a prophet among the people. Or not a prophet.
I think Samson was the first biblical character I had a crush on. Because when I was a kid, I had this Bible that was the comic Bible. It was like all illustrated stories. And of course, Samson was like this super beefy hunk. And I very distinctly remember this like particular frame of Samson bringing down like whatever building it is that he's bringing down and killing all the Philistines. And I was like, damn, something about that is speaking to me.
How old were you?
The Ruach HaKodesh was upon me. I don't know. Must have been, it was like before I had any conscious thoughts about my own sexuality. So I must have been like 10, 12, early preteen years.
I find it weirdly charming when people tell me that like they were initially attracted to like hunky man, like man's men, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking about this with Grunge Girl, how like often the first man that a woman falls for, gets a crush for, is very feminine because they're very similar to like her friends.
Interesting.
So it's like, oh, they're just a boy, but they're kind of a girl. It's like
right.
the only
just one of the gals. It's the reverse of that trope.
Yeah, and then like, you know, maybe as some people get older, they're like, well, actually what I want is like the sweaty, hairy guy, you know, for some people, you know.
Right.
So I find it kind of charming that you just jumped straight to it.
Right to Samson.
Yeah.
The manliest man to ever man. So so Samson had the Holy Spirit on him.
Yes, yes.
When he was beefily destroying the Philistine infrastructure.
Exactly. And the same Ruach Tetragrammaton is what passed from Saul to David when David became king. And so there's lots of examples of this used for like military purposes with various prophets that I don't even know their backstories to, that this Ruach Tetragrammaton is kind of used as like this category of stuff, some sort of combination of leadership skills, judgment skills, and physical strength.
Okay.
And that's one type of Ruach. And then Ruach Elohim is very interesting. It's associated with prophetic vision. So Ruach Elohim happens in the moments in Tanakh most often when they're about to get a prophetic vision and get some knowledge about the future or see some sort of truth. So like in Tanakh, I believe this is true, like Saul, the Ruach Tetragrammaton leaves him and goes to King David, the new King David. But there's still moments, I think, in the future that come after that where Saul gets the Ruach Elohim on him.
Interesting.
Yes, yes. Super interesting.
I don't know what it means, but I'm interested.
I think this is super cool. Ruach Elohim is also associated with artistic ability and like craftsmanship.
Like with Bezalel.
Yes, exactly. With Bezalel. So the Ruach Elohim comes onto Bezalel, the person who was the major craftsman of like the tent of meeting in the wilderness during the whole, 40 years in the desert. And so he has this craftsmanship and ability
right
bestowed upon him through the Ruach.
Love it.
And that's distinct from the Ruach Tetragrammaton, which we could say is associated with this charisma thing.
Right. Or physical prowess or wisdom.
Right, right, right. So I think that's very cool. And the first thing I thought of when I read that was something you said, I think on the pod, about how creativity, you mentioned this sci-fi book where creativity is thought of as like the ability to somehow tap into the parallel universes that exist.
Oh, yeah. Anathem by Neal Stephenson.
And the idea that like prophetic vision and artistic vision is somehow dealing with the plural form of the name of God. You know, this is getting super drashy, but I thought that was very cool. A very cool coincidence, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like it makes sense, like creative endeavors are somehow otherworldly because they are like imagining and creating things that have not existed or possibly cannot exist. And so like that is sort of inherently transcendent of reality by its definition.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's very cool. And I don't know if that's just like us projecting onto it or if that really was going on. Another thing that Berkowitz mentions is that, you know, there are exceptions that to these rules where sometimes the Ruach Tetragrammaton is used in reference to a prophetic vision. But another thing that he notices is that in these cases where this is breaking the pattern, it's the person receiving the vision rather than the narrator of Tanakh who is referring to the experience as coming from Ruach Tetragrammaton. So if you get the prophetic vision, you're like, oh my God, I just like got the Ruach Tetragrammaton.
Right. I just got the Ruach. Why?
Yeah, I just got the Ruach. Why? but your friend who's going to summarize it, you're perhaps the more knowledgeable priestly person who's redacting this, knows the technical distinctions and would summarize it as, no, you experienced Ruach Elohim. And perhaps in the moment when you experience it, you're very close to God and you show reverence. So you refer to it as Ruach Tetragrammaton. You wouldn't say Ruach Elohim. It's only like when you analyze it in this more scientific way, do you make the distinction between Ruach Elohim happening to you and a Ruach Tetragrammaton happening to you?
Okay. Wow. So what is there like a practical or theological difference between these two things? Or it's just like a linguistic difference that Berkowitz is pointing out?
There seems to be like a metaphysical difference between Ruach Tetragrammaton and Ruach Elohim.
Right, right.
It's both. Both are God filling you with Ruach.
Right, but they're different flavors.
This might be a reach, but it might be associated with different Sefirot. I've brought this text before, Flames of Faith, which is this modern Hasidic text by Zev Reichman, who kind of does an introduction to Kabbalah. And he associates like charismatic leadership with the Sefirot of Netzach, which is kind of the ability to dominate.
Got it. Okay.
And contrasts it with Hod, which is subservience or empathy, which is on the opposite side of the Kabbalistic tree of life. I was at least seeing that these two different ruachs could be seen as representations of Netzach versus Hod.
Oh, like in Ruach Y, God is empowering you to be most fully yourself plus. But in Ruach Elohim, you are being receptive to God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Netzach and Chod, I guess according to some Kabbalists, maybe all, who knows, they're the first Sefirot on the Tree of Life that deal with virtues of humans versus like aspects of the divine. And so I know, at least according to Zev Reichman, that there's a connection between Netzach and these virtues that come from Ruach Y. I didn't look to see if there's a connection between Chod and like connections to what we now know are associated with prophecy and artisanship to serve God. But it seems like there might be. So they're the same but different, as all the Sefirot are, as all aspects of God seem to be. And charisma is just one portion.
So then where does this leave you thinking about your relationship to charisma and your suspicion of charisma and your distrust of charisma?
Yeah, well, there's an interesting thing that Berkowitz goes into in this chapter about the various ruachs.
Okay.
So there's an evil ruach that I didn't know about that affects Saul. There's a ruach Elohim that's ra'ah, so that's evil.
Okay. Oh.
That's how I believe it appears in Tanakh. Ruach Elohim ra'ah. But Berkowitz argues that actually the Masoretes, they put a punctuation between ruach Elohim and ra'ah. So it's like there was a ruach Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next sentence talks about the effects of the Ruach Elohim on the person, and that person was Saul. So, and the effects were negative. The preposition used is, it's a Ruach Elohim that's El. It happens to Saul versus a Ruach Elohim or a Ruach Y'al that comes upon someone.
Oh.
When it's happening to you, it's then associated with some negative thing. Like,
wow,
you become a rabbling person who isn't able to deal with the prophecy, and like your character, your bad character can't deal. So it becomes like an evil experience that happens to you. Whereas when the Ruach comes upon you, it's like a positive thing. And at least Berkowitz says that, you know, yeah, it's related to the character of the person. So you can have this virtue, quote unquote, bestowed upon you by God, but then something can happen where your character gets in the way. So it's like you can have the power, but you can use it for bad. So there's like some accounting for this, at least,
mm-hmm,
in regards to Ruach Elohim. And maybe that can extend to Ruach Y, which is maybe there's a way that like you can be bestowed with charisma, but something about your character isn't able to use it, and it makes you do bad things, in the same way that apparently it made Saul do bad things when he got the Ruach Elohim. I don't know. It brings up a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I've seen other things where there is acknowledgement that charisma or leadership skills can be used for bad and evil.
Mm-hmm.
But none that take that and try to link it to like the metaphysics that I've discovered,
right,
here. I was thinking about Korach.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that too.
Yeah. And there was another text called The Leadership in Wilderness, Authority and Anarchy in the Book of Numbers by Erica Brown. And she talks about what makes a good leader. What can we learn about leadership from Tanakh? And she talks about the gadfly archetype as an important person that needs to exist to oppose leaders and kind of keep them in check.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about Korach there, and she talks about Nazarites as kind of being a symbol of that kind of gadfly that stands as a constructive threat against the spiritual leader.
Mm. And how are Nazarites that?
Well, they're just doing more intense stuff, you know.
Right. And they're, especially if you take into account the rabbis' views on them, the Nazarites are very poo-pooed by the rabbis.
Right.
That's very interesting, though, then, to think of Nazarites as sort of like a keeping some pressure on the rabbis, ideological pressure. Wow. I had no idea, like, about any of this stuff, about the different ways of talking about the spirit of Hashem. The idea of, like, using the spirit of God for evil, very intriguing, very potentially relevant to our times. I don't know. Just, I'm always intrigued by frameworks where God is sort of like more morally neutral than absolute good.
I mean, I don't know if that's what's happening here with this weird preposition to versus upon.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the idea that sometimes you're not ready for like the truths to be bestowed upon you.
Right. Sometimes you actually can't handle the truth.
And so the truth is actually something that happens to you in mm-hmm, that case, rather than something that's bestowed upon you. It's almost like Saul got in the way of the truth canon.
Right.
And got his face blasted off. And
mm-hmm,
he wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
Should have gave that to Ezekiel or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, this was a great selection to bring. I honestly didn't expect you to find something so compelling on charisma.
I know. I didn't expect to either. I mean, and, you know, it's fun to think about.
Yeah.
Fun to think about for sure.
thanks for joining us on this journey, listeners. We will continue to pepper you with our podcast periodically. If it's still Passover when you're listening to this, then Chag Sameach. If it's not, then Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov.